All right, now let's put a more specific focus on the presidential debate from this past week. As expected, the economy was a topic of discussion. Matter of fact, it was an issue addressed relatively early in the debate. While the topic of the economy has a large number of parts within it, I can't really think of any one that doesn't touch any of us. In fact, there are many parts that you could play a role in as a worker as well as a smaller, larger business owner. So how did the debate discussion with Kamala Harris and Donald Trump address this issue? Here with an analysis. He also wrote recently about what he sees regarding Kamala Harris and the American business. For Forbes, is founder and CEO of Public-Private Strategies, Rhett Bartle. How are you today, Rhett?
Good. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for coming in to share your insight. Learn more about Public-Private Strategies. It's ppsi.org, and we have that link at our homepage as well. You think of Kamala Harris, and I know that the Trump side of things have been trying to portray her as a Marxist or communist, a big government, big spender, help those who don't have and screw those who have and try to achieve. That's not exactly the picture she presented of herself, was it?
Well, look, the vice president was very clear in the debate. I mean, she's centering the way that she thinks about the economy, both in working families and small businesses. You said into the lead into the show, you know, the very first question was on the economy, and we heard from the vice president. She was raised in a small business family. The first policy platform she put out on the economy is a tax credit for small businesses who are trying to get their start to help them do deductions. So, you know, when she thinks about the economy, I think she's thinking, what are, you know, the struggles that are really holding working families and small businesses back? And I think she's put some ideas out for how to address that. And so, you know, for most people, I don't think they're thinking about things in terms of a far left or a far right, right? They're waking up every day saying, like, how do I get by to make the money to feed my family and to keep going and maybe go on a little vacation? And those are the sorts of policies that I think resonate with not only voters, but, you know, business owners and consumers.
And certainly, I mean, an individual wants to have lower taxes and more opportunities for saving, but if you don't have a place to work to earn money in the first place, how does that second idea come into play?
I think that's right. Well, look, the vice president talked about creating an opportunity economy. I think she understands that half of Americans work for a small business, which is why she's really invested in that side of really making sure that, you know, small businesses are well taken care of so they can take care of their employees and communities. So I think that's a big piece of it. But I think she understands that, like, you know, while inflation has gotten better since the pandemic, there's still more work to do to help, you know, families afford more things. And so she's laid out a plan around affordable housing. She's laid out a plan to create more competition as it relates to groceries, things that kind of affect consumers' day-to-day lives as well as affecting the business side. Now, we did see the vice president moderate a little bit on the capital gains tax. You know, President Biden in his last budget had put out a rate much higher for the capital gain tax. And when Kamala Harris laid out her plans on the campaign side, she actually notched that rate down. Now, I think she still has a higher rate than Donald Trump, and she's focused, you know, from her perspective on collecting revenue from, you know, what she would say are millionaires and billionaires who, you know, are dodging the tax system. But for the most part, she's been very consistent that, you know, no one who makes less than $400,000 would pay more on the tax side.
And certainly if we look at the topic of tariffs, if you look at the two opposing views and what most economists are saying about, well, no, it's not the source of the product that pays the tariff. It's the recipient, in some cases two times, the importer as well as the consumer who winds up paying the price for tariffs.
You know, it's interesting. Tariffs used to be something that was kind of a universally shared idea that it was bad. I think it's something that, you know, we saw under the Trump administration. And it's, you know, it's interesting because the Biden administration, while it did do a number of things to change position from the Trump administration, actually did not change all of the tariffs. And so there is some common alignment between that, between, I think, the maybe the perspectives. But, you know, the vice president in the debate did argue that a number of tariffs are going to be bad for working class and working families. She called it the Trump tariff tax, right, focused on sort of what that might translate in. And so, you know, generally across sort of the general economic board, whether it's more conservative or liberal perspective, most folks have felt like the tariff system, you know, doesn't work. Some of this is caught up a little bit in, as all things, geopolitical politics, right, and who we are doing more business with and who we're not. And obviously, you know, as China has sort of risen as more of an economic power, trying to figure out what that sort of relationship looks like between the two countries has both economic and political consequences. And I think that that's why this discussion of tariffs has become become relevant. But obviously, it's having downstream impacts on American families. And so, the vice president has laid out what she believes is an idea for sort of right-sizing those tariffs that the Trump administration put in place to make sure that working families aren't working families aren't being harmed by those tariffs downstream.
Looking at small businesses and starting one, the vice president, I guess, referred to the idea of new businesses starting up. And if you go to her website, she has the goal of a 25 million new business application by the end of her first term. That would not be something new for her, however. She'd been part of a process which has seen the significant growth in new business applications over the past 3.5 years.
Yeah, well, look, this is something I admittedly have to say that I'm most excited about. I wake up every day thinking about how to advocate for small business and entrepreneurs. I just, we know just about half of Americans work for small businesses, and we know that they, generate revenue and benefit local communities, and they're so important. And the vice president has a pretty impressive track record, starting with her time in the U.S. Senate. But even since becoming vice president, both on the engagement side, we see her travel around the country. She meets with local small business. It's so important for someone who's in that like level of office to be able to talk to business owners on the ground about what their day-to-day business looks like. And so the fact that she just has the time commitment is a big piece. But she's also done a number of things, both on the policy side as well as organizing the private sector. So she's brought a number of banks and financial institutions together to really try to tackle the capital access challenge. The number one thing we hear from small business owners when we talk to them is that cash is king. They need more access to capital. And so a lot of, small business advocacy organizations have really been impressed by her staying power. And I think the fact that she put small business out as one of her big economic pillars right out of the gate after becoming a candidate and talked about, lowering taxes for them and reducing burdensome registration, I think it's really important. And obviously, if she comes president, it will be really exciting to have someone like her who's been a real small business champion in office.
Talking with Rhett Buttle, who is founder and CEO of Public Private Strategies, PPSI.org, their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. When it comes to business regulations, is it important to hear what someone at a federal level is going to do, or is that something more important for individual states to address because there might be more regulations that are restricting business depending on the state, and there's a lot of redundancy as well?
Look, I think it's yes and or both. I put it this way. There are federal regulations that are really important to obviously safeguarding and protecting American consumers. And in some cases, regulations can provide a level playing field for small businesses to be able to compete with large businesses. But there's no doubt that there are regulations out there that make small businesses' lives harder. And, we saw a number of things in the plan that the vice president released, for example, on the tax side to really make tax filing more simplified for small businesses. The fact that small businesses have to spend so much time getting their taxes together really just leads to them not doing what they do best, which is running their business. And so that on the federal side, one of the cool things that was in the plan that I feel like is not getting as much attention in the media or quite frankly from people talking about it was there was buried in the plan this idea of some funding that would go to states and local governments that would encourage them to create compacts with other states. Particularly in places where people are doing cross-state work. And a lot of it is around occupational licensing. So a fair amount of entrepreneurs and small business owners need licensing to do the work they do. That's important. We want to make sure that we're going into a business that they're trusted and that they're verified to do the work that they're doing. But at the same time, we want to make that an easy process for them. And so the federal government can really create programs through funding pools and incentives to be able to do that. That was an idea that was in the plan that Vice President Harris laid out. And I think it's an idea that has a lot of merit that could go a long way to reducing burdensome regulation at a state and local level as well as the federal level.
For you listening, I know there have been a lot of questions about when is Vice President Harris going to come through with details and policy plans. Well, she certainly spoke of them at the debate. And if you go to her website, there are now more details to her priorities and plans on the website, because it wasn't like she was planning to do this now. She was not sitting there with a list of things to do and ways to do it and not having to do it until 2028. So obviously in 6 weeks, it was indeed a job to do. But at the same time, if you go to the Donald Trump website, they have their issue page as well. And let me see. Let me give one here. This is Chapter 5, Protect American Workers and Farmers from Unfair Trade. Step number 5 of the plan, Buy American, Hire American, period. Oh, that's descriptive, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I think this is a big challenge. You know, unfortunately, it feels like Kamala Harris was getting pushed for, like, all these details in a policy plan. And if you go to the other side's plan, you know, there's not a lot of details on the formal website. What we do know is that Trump has been closely aligned with something that folks may have heard of called Project 2025, which is an action plan that was put out by a very conservative think tank. And while that's not a problem for people to put ideas out in the space, some of the ideas are rather extreme as it relates to both the business side and the personal side of people's rights. And while I think, you know, the Trump campaign has said that those are not all of their ideas, there's quite heavy lap over, you know, I would say, in the people who advise and work with the Trump campaign and have worked in the Trump White House. And I think that that is probably a more fair understanding of, you know, Donald Trump's ideas about where he would like to take the country rather than exactly what's on his website. And the Kamala Harris campaign has been pretty clear that that's a pretty extreme agenda, and I think have done a fairly good job of trying to educate Americans about what that agenda looks like and what it might mean for families across the country.
We got about a minute left here. Talk about your company, Public-Private Strategies. What's your mission, and what do you make as an offer for people?
Yeah, look, I've been a small business organizer my whole life. I've been really focused on making sure that small business owners, Main Street entrepreneurs, have a voice in the economy. And so, you know, we work with a number of groups, whether it be larger private sector companies or philanthropic organizations, to really make sure small business perspectives are heard in the market. And the way we do that is by helping companies better understand small business perspectives. We help foundations better understand. And we also do this work of the government. You know, so we're watching these policies that are coming out every day and really making sure that people are thinking about how do we leverage the private sector to work with the government to make sure that we're creating the best society possible for everyone. So that's really the idea behind the company. And it's been a real pleasure to be able to work on behalf of business owners every day.
And you can learn more at ppsi.org. We also put a link up to Rhett's recent Forbes article about what he foresees with a Kamala Harris presidency. He is the CEO and Public-Private Strategies, also founder. Rhett Buttle, Rhett, thanks for being here, for giving us your insight to what you saw this past week.
Thanks so much for having me.